The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Today, we have Stephen Haglund of the Guilty as Charged podcast. Great name for a podcast. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me. Good to be back on the show. Obviously, Chargers Ravens takes a bit of a different altitude these days, given the sibling rivalry here. So I'm really excited to jump on here and talk about it with you.
All right. So the first time I guess these two have met in a while now, maybe since the Super Bowl. I'm trying to think if there was a matchup after that. I don't think so.
So I think that was just it. Yeah.
So they've had a lot of Ravens, a lot of ex-Ravens are there. Greg Roman, of course, the offensive coordinator. And then you've got two of our running backs over there. Give us an update on those guys. I'm sure all Baltimore is interested in hearing how they're doing.
I'll start with the best one, I'll say, and that's J.K. Dobbins. Obviously, your listeners know very well the journey that he's been on with all of the injuries and things like that. And he's playing incredibly well for the Chargers. I don't think there's the same level of juice that he had, you know, his rookie season in Baltimore when he was, you know, popping off 20-yard runs, seems like left and right. But there's still a lot of that guy left in him. He still is just creating runs out of just his vision and just his ability to anticipate where defenders are going and ability to make linebackers miss in the hole has been outstanding. So we didn't really know what to expect from JK. I mean, they paid Gus more money. They paid Gus a 2-year contract, and JK was a 1-year vet minimum contract. So we weren't exactly sure what to expect from him, but JK has been an outstanding running back. He's actually been one of the Chargers' most productive ball carriers at that position since like 2017, Melvin Gordon. He's creating first downs and explosive rushes at a rate that we're not really accustomed to seeing. And then off the field, like, his energy is just so fantastic. The team loves him. They really rallied around him, and he gives everybody nicknames. And so he's been a great contribution to the locker room, and he's just a joy to listen to speak. And then on the field, he's playing really, really well. And I would say certainly earning himself a pretty hefty pay raise, I should say, next offseason.
All right. Dobbins had a great success rate in Baltimore in terms of his, I noticed that's way down this year at about 40%, yeah, which kind of belies the 4.8 yards per carry, which is good.
Yeah. He's not consistently hitting success rate super high right now. The rushing yards over expectation is another stat that I like, that he's kind of middle of the pack in rushing yards over expectation. But he's consistently hitting 12, 15 yard runs, and that's kind of, you know, propping up his overall yards per carry number. And there's just times where, you know, he'll pop out a run that shouldn't go for 12 yards. It probably should go for like 2 or 3. But a lot of the times he just is getting what the Chargers are blocking, which is sometimes, you know, 3 or 4 yards. And that's kind of how they're going. So it's not a super efficient version of J.K. Dobbins, but he still has that pop every once in a while. And I think that's to be expected, right? Like, he just had his Achilles torn last September. And so he's barely over a year from that. And so he's kind of talked about that more recently, where, you know, he's able to potentially go to another gear next year once he's, you know, has some more time of the injury behind him.
I can think of one more pretty significant factor is that he's not playing with Lamar Jackson. Gus Edwards, the other guy we want to talk about, at the highest career rate of success when he went to the Chargers at almost 57%, or maybe he's slightly over 57% even. They've been only keeping the stat for about 30 years, but I think it's still a remarkable achievement for Gus. Pretty much was all about Lamar Jackson. If you look at the all-time leaders in the category in the 30 years, they're pretty much a bunch of guys who played with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, the experience with Gus has been a little up and down. There was a weird little like slip up from Jim Harbaugh in the offseason right before training camp that Gus had some mystery offseason surgery that was never really public information. And then the next time he spoke to the media, he kind of walked it back and was like, no, like that didn't happen. And like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be like a Gus Edwards expert, right? But like the Chargers signed him. I went back and watched some of his tape from last season from Baltimore. And then the guy that he came out to start the season just did not look the same. It looked like he was significantly less spry. And so he gets put on injured reserve after week three. And then when he comes back a couple weeks ago, he started to look like more of himself. You know, he popped off a couple big runs this past week against the Bengals. He had some really nice runs, a little bit more power to it, you know, behind his pad, so to speak. And so I think Gus is getting back to who he was. But so far this season has been pretty up and down for him. And part of that is just because JK has the trust of this coaching staff so much. And Gus doesn't really do the whole third down thing very much either. So the Gus experience has been kind of the opposite of JK, where it's like we kind of had more expectations for Gus because he got the contract and he hasn't exactly, you know, made do on that quite yet.
Understood. Okay. So Greg Roman, ran out of Baltimore unfairly, I think. People forget the 2019 season and just how great it was and how he built the offense around Lamar and whatnot. How's he been doing in San Diego so far?
Well, I think he's made a lot of very good adjustments throughout the season. You know, they started the season and it was a lot of like old school Harbaugh types. Like they would do 13 personnel. Like I think they're running 13. They were running 13 personnel with the three tight ends like 40% of the time. And they were trying to really pound the rock and it just was not working. And some of that was Justin Herbert dealing with a high ankle sprain after week two, but it felt archaic almost watching the offense over the first 4 weeks. And then, you know, they come out of the bye week, and since the bye week, they are second in the league in passing rate above expectation. They're second in early down pass rate. So Greg has made a lot of good adjustments. They're letting Justin throw the football a lot more. Obviously, he had 42 dropbacks this past week against the Bengals. It's been fun to see the evolution. They're doing a lot of cool stuff with the RPO aspect of things that I think can be traced, obviously, to his, you know, time at Stanford and his ability to use these mobile quarterbacks and things like that. The play action game is really working right now. The run game is kind of starting to come along. So he's improving every single week, and it's been fun to see him make some of these adjustments and let Justin Herbert start to throw the football a lot more.
All right, let's move on to Herbert. What's new about his game this year that we didn't know about before? I've seen his aggregate statistics are a little bit lower. He's got a low interception total. He's got a lower touchdown total as well.
Yeah, so he's even though they're letting him throw the football more recently, he's only averaging about 29 passing attempts per game, I believe, last time I checked. Under the Brandon Staley regime, he was averaging about 39 per game. So it's about 10 passes-ish fewer per game. The turnovers has always kind of been a strength of his. He's always been a turnover-averse player. But what's different is just kind of the confidence that he's been playing with. You know, we saw glimpses every now and then of this guy who was just, you know, out there having a great time, but it was never really consistent. Nowadays he's celebrating at big plays, he's first down pointing, he's taking off and running a lot more consistently, which I think is a part of the ankle but also part of how he's being coached. And so there's just a lot more exuberance about Justin Herbert right now. You know, he's always been a great football player to me, but now we're kind of seeing him go out there and just have fun. And I think it sounds simple, but that's a lot of what the Chargers are right now under Jim Harbaugh. Is all these players are talking about that it's just fun to go to work now, and they're having a great time and being put in positions to succeed. So it's a different feel specifically for Justin because he's just playing lighter and freer. And I think that's kind of allowing him to be his best self right now.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. So let's talk through some of the remainder of the personnel. Let's go start with the offensive line. Let's go left to right there.
Sure.
And one of the really tough moments in the draft for me was seeing Joe Alt go at number five, because I realized the run and tackles had started with a team that I didn't think was necessarily going to take a tackle. And that was really a shame in terms of the Ravens' chance to get one towards the bottom of the first round.
Yeah. We always kind of figured that they would take a tackle. We thought maybe J.C. Latham, because J.C. Latham was a natural right tackle, and both Harbaugh and Joe Hortiz, who's another Baltimore guy we can talk about, those two have had obviously a propensity to draft and develop SEC players. They love SEC players. And so we kind of figured maybe Latham would be the tackle, and there was a really late push in April for Latham to be the fifth overall in terms of like betting markets and things like that. But they reportedly only had eyes for Joe Alt, and Joe Alt was the guy from the start. And they talked about that publicly afterwards, where they watched Joe Alt. He was the first prospect they watched, and they didn't even really do any other homework on the other players. They were sold on Alt immediately. And he's been awesome. He's exceeded all expectations for us, you know, as a fifth overall pick, and some draft analysts were comparing him to Penei Sewell and things like that. And I'm not going to say he's the best offensive line in football like I think Penei is, but Joe Alt has been awesome. And you look at the advanced metrics, you look at PFF grades, whatever you look at, you watch the tape, he's consistently making an impact. And if you don't have a guy named Miles Garrett or TJ Watt, Joe's probably going to lock you down. And that's kind of been the prospect he's been so far right now. He's been awesome as a run blocker. One of the most flexible and bendiest 6'9 guys I've ever seen in my life. He can get pad level right next to, you know, whoever he's going up against. And the things that they ask him to do in the run game are outstanding. So Joe Alt, to me, offensive rookie of the year will never go to an offensive lineman. But to me, Joe Alt has been the best rookie in the league so far because he's just been a steady anchor. And he had one bad game against the Browns where he allowed four pressures, and all of the other nine games he's played, he's allowed nine pressures. He's basically allowing one pressure per game outside of that one Browns performance. So he's been outstanding.
Unbelievable. When a rookie starts off, jumps into the league and able to play, then he's probably, I mean, injuries aside, he may well be headed for the Hall of Fame, because very unusual for a rookie to start at this level right off the bat.
Yeah, I went back and looked at like all of the rookie offensive tackles that have hit his pass blocking grade, run blocking grade, pass blocking efficiency rating. And it's like him, Rashawn Slater, who we can talk about as well. And then it was like Taylor Lewan, Mike Onwenu, Ronnie Stanley. And that was it. Like it was like five names that were on that list. So he's doing wonderfully right now.
All right. Move over to left guard. Take us right through the offensive.
Okay, line. Yeah, sure. So Rashawn Slater's the left tackle who I mentioned. He's been fantastic. He was a second team All Pro as a rookie. He was another guy who came in right away, and you know he's had some injuries here and there over the last couple of seasons, and he's been fully healthy this season. And Justin Herbert told the media last week that Rashawn is actively telling them to stop chipping. He doesn't want any chip help. He just wants to play on an island, and he doesn't want the scheme help. He doesn't want the chip help, double team help. He wants to handle it. And, you know, he got beat by Miles Garrett a couple times. Miles Garrett was insane against that in that game. But outside of that, Rashawn has just been nails. Trey Hendrickson was a complete non-factor against Rashawn. He did beat the left guard for a sack on like the second play of the game. And then outside of that, Trey was just non-existent. So Rashawn is, to me, one of the three or four best offensive tackles in the league, period. And he's just a guy who can completely shut down that side. He's a great run blocker, athleticism, technique. So he's outstanding. The Chargers have, to me, one of the best offensive tackle duos in the league. The issues for them have been the interior, left guard Zion Johnson, center Bradley Bozeman, who you guys are familiar with, and then right guard Trey Pipkins have just not gelled very well. They have a ton of issues from a stunt protection and blitz pickup standpoint. It's been a massive issue. they did much better this past week, but the Bengals defensive line is not really anything to write home about outside of Trey. So this is a game where Chargers fans are very, very nervous about Nnamdi Madueke, Travis Jones, etc., because this is just not an interior group that inspires a lot of confidence like the tackles do.
All right. All right. Very good to know. Let's talk about the wide receiver core a little bit.
Yeah. So they're led by Ladd McConkey, the rookie. He had a huge game on Sunday, his second 100-yard game of his career. And he primarily lines in the slot, but he does do a lot of work as a backside Z receiver as well. You know, they're starting to kind of take his role to the next level. You know, they started out in the season. It was a lot of short intermediate routes. It was a lot of curl concepts, slants, ways to just get open quickly. And now he's doing a lot of vertical route tree, you know, explosive plays. He had two of them on Sunday against the Bengals. And so he's their wide receiver one. He's on pace for a 1,000-yard season right now as it currently stands. He's averaging over 2 yards per route run, which is a fantastic number. And he's kind of becoming Justin's go-to guy in clutch situations as well. Third downs, gotta have it moments. He often has most often looked towards Ladd McConkey, and he was a second round pick out of Georgia, and he's been fantastic. Outside of that, they don't really have a true number two receiver, I would say. Quentin Johnston, the former first round pick out of TCU, and Joshua Palmer, who's a former third round pick out of Tennessee from a few years ago. Those two kind of are going back and forth in terms of the number two role. One week it's Quentin, one week it's Joshua Palmer. Very different roles. Joshua Palmer is more of a, you know, contested catch over the middle kind of player, and Quentin is kind of a get the ball to him in space, to try and get him open vertically a little bit here and there. And so those two guys are the main ones behind Ladd. And then they have Jalen Reagor is kind of becoming a thing for them. They have Darius Davis, who's kind of a gadget player. And then they did sign DJ Chark in the offseason, but he was on injured reserve up until 3 weeks ago. And they have not really brought him back into the lineup very much. So it's mostly just Ladd, Quentin Johnston, and Palmer. Those are the three guys who are going to be on the field the most.
Looking at snaps per play, it doesn't look like they're very much over two wide receivers per play. So fairly limited use of 11.
Yeah, they'll go into 11 personnel on third downs, but they really are trying to lean into their tight ends and Will Dissly, who's been mostly a blocking tight end in his career. He's having a career season with the Chargers, so it's been kind of interesting to see. He's got a great rapport with Justin Herbert right now. Heading into the season, Will Dissly's career high in yardage was, I think, 249 yards, and he passed that a couple weeks ago. He's on pace for almost 600 yards receiving, so he's a guy they really trust. They have Stone Smart, who's kind of a Isaiah Likely type of player. Obviously not anywhere near as successful as Likely has been, but he's kind of their vertical stretch tight end. Let's maybe get him some yak opportunities every once in a while. And then they've got these two big bulking former defensive linemen, Scott Matlock and Tucker Fisk, who have kind of become their go-to blockers. So they try and do a lot with multiple tight ends. They don't, you know, do 11 personnel a whole lot. You know, they do trust J.K. Dobbins as well as kind of a pass catcher, but it is mostly, 12 personnel sets and 13 personnel because they want to get kind of the body matchups with the tight ends.
You didn't mention Hayden Hurst. Is he hurt now?
No, but he was on the injury report last week with a personal issue, and then he didn't play on Sunday. He was a healthy scratch. So we don't really know what's going on with Hayden, but he might have been passed in the depth chart. He might be dealing with something off the field. We don't really know much there.
So the Ravens have had a situation, as you may know, with Eddie Jackson, where they actually said he wasn't traveling with the team, and it was not injury related, was how they labeled it. So they didn't say personal matter. So if he's got a personal matter, usually the team is very understanding about such things if there's a death in the family or whatever. Yes, but they haven't used any salty language.
No, nothing salty that we know about. He was at the game on Sunday. I don't know. Like, it could just be a depth chart thing. Maybe it was a specific matchup thing. But he hasn't been super involved in the game plan anyway. They opened the season. He had a ton of snaps. He was their main target getter in the whole offense week one. And that's like the only time we really have seen him be super involved. So he's, I don't know. It's an interesting situation. They're not really talking about it. We'll see kind of what happens this week, but I wouldn't expect him to be a huge factor in this game.
One of the big disappointments in recent draft years for the Ravens was the Ravens not selecting Derwin James and instead going after, they had him at 16 and they trade the pick to the Chargers.
Yep. Thank you for that.
Actually, no, they didn't do that. I think it was Terrell Edmonds was taken. Buffalo traded for the pick and then the Chargers got him at 17 or something.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, yeah. it pissed us off.
At least you guys had the you know, forbearing knowledge to double dip and take Mark Andrews in the same class. So it worked out, I would say.
And got Lamar Jackson at the end of the first.
Yeah,
It wasn't a bad draft by any means. It could have been even that much greater.
That's fair.
All right. So let's keep going. The running back and didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They use a fullback at all?
Yeah, so Scott Matlock is their fullback. He was drafted to the Chargers last season out of Boise State as a defensive tackle. And during training camp, they experimented with like six players as a fullback. One of them was an offensive lineman. One of them was Hayden Hurst, got some reps at fullback. There was another tight end who is not on the team anymore. And then they brought in Tucker Fisk, who's on the team now. During training camp from Atlanta, and then they were like, hey, like Scott Matlock, like let's just see. He did have a couple passing receiving touchdowns at Boise State. That's kind of like a goal line jumbo tight end type deal, and so they just kind of gave him a shot, and it's been going really well, honestly. You know, it hasn't been super clean. There's some technique things that he's got to clean up, but I thought he had his best game as a blocker this past week against the Bengals, and he's really bringing a physical element to the team that they haven't had in a long time. The old regime didn't have a fullback, so they never carried a fullback. The Anthony Lynn Chargers did carry a fullback, Derek Watt, but he would play like 5-6 snaps a game, and Scott Matlock is at like 25 snaps a game. Yeah. They have thrown him a couple of passes, so this is Patrick Ricard 2.0, I guess. I would say Patrick Ricard is a significantly better player right now. Obviously, he's had a lot of years in that role. But they had him blocking, not Hendrickson, what's the other? Sam Hubbard, one-on-one in pass protection this past week, and he held up pretty well. So they're putting a lot on his plate. He plays like 5 or 6 snaps a game on defense, so he's kind of gone away from that. He's basically just a fullback now. But every once in a while, he will pop in on defense as well.
All right. It's been a long time since Ricard's played on defense. So prefer to run out of heavier sets. You mentioned 13, but a lot of 21, 12, 22.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So their main thing right now is when Tucker Fisk and Scott Matlock are on the field at the same time, that's usually when they'll get Gus in there. So that's their big like physical package. And they'll actually do a lot of outside zone, which I think suits Gus very well. Mm-hmm. So if you see 44, who's Matlock, and 42, who's Fisk, in the game, you're probably going to get some kind of outside zone run or inside zone or counter or something like that. That's kind of like their biggest run package right now with Gus Edwards in particular.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's flip over to the defensive side. One of the things I like to always ask about first is how do they line up when they're trying to defend the pass, and how does that differ from what they might use as a base or a standard versus 11 personnel package or versus 12 personnel package they might use?
Yeah, they love playing in dime. They love having Derwin James in a dime linebacker role. Obviously, as you guys, your listeners know, Jesse Minter does come from the Baltimore tree. And so there's a lot of similarities to how they use Derwin James as to how Kyle Hamilton is being used in Baltimore, which makes a lot of sense. Both of them are very freaky players. So they love playing in dime. A lot of that is because of Derwin. But also they believe they have three starting safeties. They have Alohi Gilman, and then they have Elijah Molden, who they traded for in training camp from the Tennessee Titans. And they love what Molden can bring to the table. So they try and get the three of them out on the field as much as possible. And so Derwin is playing a lot of snaps in the slot, and he's playing a lot of snaps in dime linebacker because they love what Molden can bring them. So they said, Jesse Minter said last week in his press conference, they think their best personnel package in the secondary is Derwin James in the slot. And then their two outside corners are Cam Hart, a rookie out of Notre Dame, and then Christian Fulton, who they signed from the Titans, and then Molden and Alohi Gilman at safety. So their nickel package, they feel like is their best overall package, and that's basically their base defense. So
it's a big nickel too, is what you're making if Derwin's in the slot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And they'll play Derwin against whoever. You know, when they played the Cardinals, he lined up with against Greg George. Against the Browns, he lined up against Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku. Mm-hmm. So they're very comfortable with Derwin James in man coverage against smaller slot receivers, against a big tight end. And obviously with this week against the Ravens, I would expect to see a lot of Derwin James against Mark Andrews. He's kind of been that guy for the most of his career, is let's go match you up with tight ends. And he's done that for several years against Travis Kelce. Some up and down performances there against one of the best tight ends ever. But that's the marquee matchup on that side of the ball this week for me is Derwin James against Mark Andrews.
All right, let's move up front. I always like to talk about rotation, depth of the defensive line, and snap management. Big bugaboo for the Ravens right now, but we don't need to get into that. And the Chargers, in terms of their front four, how do they line up, and do they go to base off, and what do they do?
Yeah, so they do play with five defensive linemen from time to time, usually in heavier personnel sets. I'm very curious to see what Jesse Minter does this week against the Ravens, because obviously the Ravens also do a lot of two tight end sets. You know, they'll get Charlie Kolar in there as well. So is that a way that Jesse Minter is kind of forced to play base packages, and how does he handle that? Because they want to defend the run with light boxes. They play six men in the box at the highest rate in the league right now. And again, part of that is because of Derwin James and his flexibility and his ability to play as a kind of pseudo linebacker type. But their defensive tackles are kind of an unheralded group. There's definitely not a Nnamdi Madueke on that team. There's not even a Travis Jones on that team. But they signed Puna Ford from the Bills last year, and he's been fantastic for them. He's been one of the best, you know, nose tackles in the league in terms of run stop win rate on ESPN, pass rush win rate on PFF. And then T.R. Tartt, who they signed from, gosh, where was he? I think he was with the Dolphins. He got cut by the Dolphins in training camp. They picked him up, and he's been outstanding for them. So two bigger physical guys who are kind of controlling the middle of the defenses allow them to play with those light boxes, and it's been a, you know, very underrated aspect of their defense.
Okay. All right. I hear you talking about the six-man box. The Ravens at the line of scrimmage have kind of used that as the invitation to the dance when they want to run the football. So when they see it at the line of scrimmage, they often have two plays called, and Lamar will go to that kind of a read option play out of that, which is obviously very difficult to defend in those circumstances. Yes. So it might be a change. We'll see what Minter does. Minter is one of the guys that I would have really loved to have join the Baltimore coaching staff after he left Michigan, but I guess it was a foregone conclusion he'd go with Harbaugh.
Yeah, he's been outstanding. He's exceeded all expectations because, you know, we were kind of looking at this like, okay, we really think Jesse Minter's a smart coach. Like, everybody who has worked around him at Michigan says that he's brilliant. But the Chargers really didn't have a lot of resources to work with, you know, on defense. I'm talking a lot about of these guys who are on like veteran minimum contracts. And so outside of Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa and Derwin James, all of these other guys are young players who are kind of working through the NFL life. And some of them are playing extremely well, or it's a lot of veterans, right? Like a lot of stopgap kind of veterans, and Jesse Minter to take this defense into being, you know, they were first in the league in scoring heading into last week. I don't think they're the best defense in the league, but I think they're probably one of the six or seven best defenses in the league. And that is a tremendous accomplishment and credit to Jesse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's that is overperforming for that group in terms of what they have. How about off-ball linebackers? Who is there?
Yeah, so they drafted Junior Colson in the third round out of Michigan, which made a ton of sense. He knew the defense inside and out. He's on injured reserve right now. He's kind of been their second linebacker, but he's not really playing, obviously, because he's on injured reserve. Their main linebacker is Deion Henley, who was drafted out of Washington State. He didn't play under the previous regime. He was kind of a special teams only player. He's got over 95 tackles right now, I think. I might be overestimating that number, but it's in the 90s. And he's been outstanding. They use him kind of as a, I don't know what the term is, but he's kind of Derwin James's running mate, right? Like, so they move him around in the same kind of way that they move Derwin James around. They'll put him on the line of scrimmage to kind of create a pseudo penny package with a five-man front, and then the other linebacker, or Derwin, will be as like the actual linebacker. They'll have him match up with tight ends. He match up with Trey McBride quite a bit against the Cardinals. They'll drop him from a simulated pressure up on the line of scrimmage to Tampa 2, 15 yards back behind the ball. So he's an athletic freak, and there's a lot of range there. There's a lot of speed. He's not the biggest guy, so taking on blockers is not really a strong suit. But if he has space in front of him, he has the speed to just go out there and fly around, and he's been able to do that this season. He's taken a tremendous leap forward as their main linebacker. And since Junior Colson has been injured, Denzel Perryman has been their second linebacker, and he's just a hammerhead, man. Like, he just wants to hit people. He just wants to come forward. Kind of like a smaller version of Patrick Queen, right? Like, if they're going forward, they're great, right? They just want to go hit people. But he's not somebody you want to put into coverage situations. He's not somebody you want like matching up on a running back in space. Like, he just wants to go forward, and he wants to play the run, and he wants to hit people. So those are their main two. And then Troy Dye, former Minnesota Viking, he's kind of their third linebacker now that Junior Colson is hurt. So he'll play 5 or 10 snaps probably on Sunday.
All right, let's go ahead and move to the secondary. Talk us across that.
Yeah, so I mentioned Cam Hart and Christian Fulton. Those two players are their main outside corners. Cam Hart did get a concussion on Sunday against the Bengals, so we'll have to monitor him and his availability. But they use him as kind of their press coverage corner. They really like to let him be physical and go at the line of scrimmage, and he had I thought was having a great game on Jamar Chase up until he got injured. And then Fulton, they really like to use in cover two looks. They really like to have him be able to monitor the flat and the hook area, be able to go tackle in front of him. And he's been very good in that role. He did have a couple of pass breakups on T. Higgins this past week. So he's prone to get beat on double moves. He's a little grabby at times, but he's a fine, you know, veteran stop back corner. If Cam Hart can't play, you'll see a lot of Tarheeb Still, who they also drafted this year. Some of your listeners might be familiar with him because he was drafted out of Maryland. He's kind of a nickel outside corner flex type of player. Not the fastest guy in the world, not the most change of pace guy in the world, but his ball skills are fantastic. He's got a couple of pressures on the year. They like to use him as a blitzer. So he's a pretty solid option behind those two guys. And then they signed Eli Apple to the practice squad a few weeks ago, and he's stepped in and played a few snaps every once in a while, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with him from his days in Cincinnati. But he's been solid. You know, they're not playing him a ton, but he's kind of their Cam Hart backup. He's the only other guy that they let kind of press and be physical at the line. So if Cam Hart can't play, you'll probably see a decent amount of Eli Apple as well.
All right. So the Chargers are going to line up against a Ravens offense that is among the best in the league. Yes. Do you see anything different about the way they'll approach the game, you know, when they have the multitude of Ravens weapons to defend?
Yeah, I think they have placed such an emphasis on stopping the run first that I think the answer probably has to be that they play with a heavier box this week. Maybe not five defensive linemen, but you probably see a lot of Denzel Perryman this week, more so than he has in the past. They try to keep him around 40 snaps a game. So that's probably going to bump up to 60 because I think you have to be able to have a heavier box, maybe not eight men boxes, because it's just then you open up everything vertically and that kind of plays into their hands. But I think you got to get at least seven in the box with this week and do your best to keep the Ravens off schedule as much as you can. You know, it's a very difficult task. We have a lot of respect for what this Ravens offense is capable of. And coming off of a bad week against the Steelers, we are definitely very concerned about this matchup. So Jesse Minter is a smart coach. They have vastly exceeded expectations. They'll have a plan, but everybody has a plan. And then Derrick Henry stiff arms you into the next dimension and then it kind of goes out the window. So, but I think you've got to load the box a little bit more. You know, let Derwin James play, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage, maybe play a lot more cover three this week instead of cover two. And I think, you know, as long as Derrick Henry isn't destroying you, you have, I think, at least a puncher's chance of potentially winning this game.
Okay. Do you have who's favored initially in this game?
I would be surprised if the Chargers were favored, but I can look that up real quick.
I wouldn't be shocked. They're at home. Maybe point or two would be either way would be my guess. All right. Well, fantastic. I don't do score predictions on the show, but what I do want you to do is pick a player on each side of the ball who you think matches up extremely well against the Ravens.
The Ravens are 3-point favorites, for what it's worth.
Okay.
So kind of a little less than a little more than a toss up. I want to talk about, we haven't mentioned him a ton so far today, but the Chargers edge rusher that's on the rise right now is Tuli Tuipulotu. They drafted him in the second round out of USC last season. And we saw some real flashes. Like there was a 9 pressure game against the Jets last year. There was an 8 pressure game against the Vikings last year. But it was mostly a lot of run defense. And it was kind of a work in progress as a pass rusher. And over the last 5 weeks in particular, he has really started to put things together from a consistency standpoint. You know, we're seeing him do a little bit more of a long arm, a little bit more of oh my gosh, I can't think of the phrase right now. Cross chop. There we go. Got there eventually. He's starting to put together some counters, whereas last year was a lot of bull rush, a lot of speed to power. That's kind of his bag from Tennessee. And now he's really starting to turn it on. So over the last 4 weeks, he actually has the most pressures in the NFL and most sacks in the NFL. And he's wow. 8th in pass rush win rate. So he's really, really turning it on. And that's been really needed because Joey Bosa has not been healthy. Khalil Mack has been missed the last 2 weeks with a groin injury. So they've really needed Tuli to come on strong. And he has done that. He's an outstanding run defender, plays the edges extremely well. And the pass rush is starting to come along well. So how does that matchup affect, you know, the overall plan? Because Roger Rosengarten's obviously a rookie right tackle. That's where Tuli is going to play the bulk of his snaps. And he ate Amarius Mims' lunch this past Sunday. He had 8 pressures, 2 sacks, 3 other quarterback hits. He was in Joe Burrow's face the entire game. So that, to me, if Tuli can replicate that, Lamar Jackson's obviously a very difficult quarterback to sack. But if he can create that kind of pressure against the Ravens, I think that is probably the best chance to be able to affect him very much. Because I don't think Khalil Mack will play a whole lot. He might play, but I don't think he's going to play more than like 20 snaps a game just because he's been dealing with this groin injury. So Tuli's been their best pass rusher over the last month, and that's kind of the main thing on defense I'm interested to see.
How about Bosa? Because I don't think we hit on him earlier. How's he playing this year?
So he's been injured as well, which unfortunately is not a new thing for Joey Bosa. He's been dealing with the after effects of a core muscle surgery that he had 2 years ago. And he re-aggravated that injury in week one against the Raiders. So this past Friday was actually the first time since week one he had been a full participant in practice. So it's been kind of a slog of a season for him. He doesn't have the same kind of power that we're used to seeing, but he's so technically refined that he'll get, you know, a bad offensive tackle, which is what the Bengals had this past week. They were starting Cody Ford at left tackle. Mm-hmm. He's so technically refined that he'll beat guys just on that every now and then. And then you'll see, you know, a long arm here or there that kind of is like, oh, okay, maybe Joey's kind of working back a bit. Against Ronnie Stanley, I'm not expecting a whole lot of Joey Bosa this week. You know, Ronnie has been one of the better bounce back stories of the season so far. It was a bummer watching him last year, right? And doing the, like, they were rotating tackles and everything. It was sad to watch because I love trench play and I love watching Ronnie Stanley play. So now that Ronnie's back to Ronnie, I'm not really expecting a whole lot of Joey Bosa. So if the Chargers get edge pressure, it's going to be Thule against Rosengarten.
Okay. All right. Very good. And we'll leave it at that. Really appreciate you coming on, Steve. Steven, tell us where they can find your work online or possibly talk football with you if they want to.
Yeah. So I'm on the Guilty as Charged podcast. We're on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you guys want to check us out. And then I'm at Steven I. Haglund on Twitter and Blue Sky. If you're on Blue Sky, a lot of us have kind of made the transition over there. And so it's been a fun conversation over on that new app. So yeah, it's been great to chat with you again. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the listen.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. The DMs are always open on Twitter, and I've got room during the bye week to schedule a show or two. Thanks for listening again. Steven, thanks for coming on. And we'll talk to you next time on
Film Study. All right, man. Study. Thanks.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.